members, thank you all for coming out today. The Education Appropriations Subcommittee of Tuesday, September 24th, will come to order. Will Ms. Deborah please call the roll?
Mr. Chair?
Present.
Vice Chair Rayburn?
Here.
Ranking Member Taylor?
Here.
Representatives Atkins, Ahern,
here.
Dentel,
here.
Fitzhagen,
here.
Jones,
here.
Lee,
here.
O'Toole,
here.
Perry,
here.
Excuse Reed, Stone,
here.
A quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Deborah, and members, welcome once again. Our committee remains unchanged from last year. Once again, I want to tell you all what an honor it is for me to chair this committee and to work alongside all of you. You did a great job last year in getting into the budget and really asking the good questions and getting involved, so I appreciate that. And we'll need to do that a lot this year as well as we go into our second budget year. While the membership remains unchanged in our committee, and I'm always sad to lose in title by Vice Chair O'Toole, we have a new vice chair, a young man who has certainly earned the promotion. I think if anybody who saw him working in this committee last year knows that he did a wonderful job. He was judicious, always did his work on time, and I'm very proud to call Mr. Representative Rayburn our new vice chair. So welcome, Mr. Vice Chair. And members, I look forward again to working with each and every one of you today. We have a couple of presentations that we'll be going through, and I would like to take a moment to remind you of our committee staff. Our staff is also unchanged, and as you're aware, they are available for you at all times. Ms. Alice Heflin, our budget chief, Francis Butler, Jamie Garner, and Jennifer Seifert, seated all three in the back, our legislative analysts, and Ms. Deborah Richard, my boss, our administrative assistant. So, we have a good continuity on the committee this year, and we'll get straight to the work at hand to not waste any time. Today, we're going to have a brief presentation by Alice on the K-12 FTE reporting policy changes that we made last session, and then the department staff will also update us on the implementation process of said change. Alice will also provide us a brief overview of the major drivers and potential funding issues for education based on the statutorily required long-range financial outlook, which was submitted to the LBC earlier this month. Alice, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is that working? Okay. I'm actually going to flip the order a little bit and first talk about the estimating conference updates, and then we'll go into the FTE stuff so there's some fluidity between my presentation and the DOE's presentation. Since session, your staff have been very busy, as we always are. We sit as principals on a number of estimating conferences, and so we have been working and participating in those. The main conferences that we focus on are the enrollment estimating conferences, which are primarily responsible for the estimating and adopting of the official forecasts for enrollment of the FEFP, the VPK program, and for Florida colleges. Since session, we have had meetings of all three of those conferences, and we have estimated an increase in pre-K through 12 enrollment for the FEFP and a slight increase in the Florida colleges enrollment, and there is a projected very small 438 FTE, is almost non-existent in VPK. The estimating conferences that have been held over the summer primarily were used for the development of the estimates for the long-range financial outlook. This, as the chairman mentioned, was adopted by the Legislative Budget Commission September 12th. The outlook is a constitutional requirement for the legislature to plan and forecast revenues and expenditures each year. We refer to it as the three-year plan because we forecast for 3 years out. The annual projection is required to be approved by the LBC by September 15th of each year. And as I said, the LBC adopted this latest one on September 12th. The way we do the calculations for the outlook, we use a set of assumptions to calculate the projected expenditure need for the major programs that are part of your annual General Appropriations Act. These expenditures are then grouped into what's formally called critical needs and other high priority needs. We colloquially refer to those as Tier 1 and Tier 2 expenditure needs. In education, the estimates for Tier 1 are based on maintaining the same level of funding as was provided in 13-14. So if you look at the forecast, the projected outlook, you'll see for 14-15, the $113.5 million for the FEFP would maintain the same per-student funding as you adopted in the 13-14 budget. Similarly, because of the projected decline in the VPK enrollment, you would see a projected savings of around $735,000 to maintain the same per-student funding for each student in VPK that was provided in 13-14. In higher education, the Tier 1 estimates maintain the same level of funding for the Florida Virtual Campus and for Bright Futures by restoring non-recurring funding for the Florida Virtual Campus. And for Bright Futures, there is, again, a projected decline in eligible students of almost 17,000 students. Almost 19,000 students, which results in a savings of around $33 million. The Bright Futures eligible enrollment is projected to decrease because of the increased test scores that were passed a few years ago as a requirement for students graduating in the 13-14 academic year to be eligible for that scholarship. In Tier 2 for higher education, there's an estimated funding increase to provide workload increases for Florida colleges and universities. Those increases are based on the four-year average of appropriations. And we also provided a Tier 2 Bright Futures workload, which was calculated based on increasing the award amount per student by the amount of a four-year average of actual tuition increases. A little more detail about how the financial outlook is calculated. The financial outlook assumes the use of large available revenue sources, such as GR, Educational Enhancement Trust Fund revenues, state school trust fund revenues, and other large trust funds like tobacco and transportation trust funds. For education, that means using both available revenues from the EETF and the state school trust fund to pay for estimated costs. So when you see the estimated costs on the previous slide, that means that some of those costs would have been paid for out of the EETF or SSTF. In the Educational Enhancement Trust Fund, there's a total increase in the fund projected of $164.6 million after the reserve of 3.7% is taken into account. That additional funding is used to provide for the restoration of the non-recurring in the FEFP, and it results in some fund shifts from GR to the EETF in each of the public schools, Florida colleges, and universities' budgets. So if you look at the long-range financial outlook, and if any of you are interested in a copy of the document, we can email that to the committee membership. But if you looked at the summary, you would see a projected decline in general revenue and an increase in the same amount from the trust funds to simply reflect the trust fund expenditures from the EETF and the SSTF, as I just described. And that's it on the outlook.
Before we move on to the implementation, members, any questions, Malice, regarding those figures? Representative Jones, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Alice, if you could speak a little bit to what the reasoning is or the expected reasoning is for the decline in the VPK enrollment.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. In the estimating conference, we have seen over time, VPK is a relatively new program. It only started in 2004-05, And as the program was ramping up or really getting its feet off the ground, we've seen huge increases in participation. VPK is voluntary, so it's not a mandatory participation for four-year-olds, but any four-year-old that shows up is eligible to be served and funded. So as that has grown, we've seen in prior years 20 and 30% increases. But what we're experiencing now is a leveling off of that participation. We see about 80% of four-year-olds participating, which is actually more than any other state that has a similar program. And we're just not seeing the increases. We think that we're hitting not a capping, but just a maturity of the program.
You talked about the Bright Futures enrollment and the change in the scoring. Do we have numbers as to the impact in terms of the number of students that were not eligible to participate in Bright Futures as a result of the change in scoring?
We have a projection. We haven't seen actual enrollment yet because this is the 13-14 is the first year of the capping out of the scores. So in 12-13, for the academic award, the SAT score requirement was 1270, and the medallion requirement was 1020. In 13-14, it bumps up to 1290 and 1170 for the two different award types. So we haven't seen the actual enrollment, but we have a forecasted enrollment decline of almost 19,000 students for 13-14. But what we are seeing is that more students are renewing because the assumption is that they're more prepared by having to achieve those higher scores. So we're seeing a much higher rate of renewal and continuation towards their degree, but we're seeing a lower initial eligibility.
So for the 12-13 year, the score was what?
12-13, it was 1280 for the academic award and 1020 for the medallion.
And what was it for 11-12?
11-12, academic was 1270, and medallion was 980.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Members, anybody else? Okay. Seeing no other questions, let's move on to the implementation update.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Most of you will remember that last year we had a major change in the way that districts will report FTE and the FEFP for funding purposes. Since session, we have worked very closely with DOE to make sure that this policy is implemented appropriately and accurately. And to give you some background, Chairman Frezen asked that I explain the change in the policy first, and then DOE will go into the steps that they've taken over the summer to implement the change. So prior to the change, the law actually stated that the maximum value for funding a student shall be 1.0 FTE. But because there were data issues with matching students' records according to a unique student identifier, the maximum of 1.0 FTE was never enforced or implemented for virtual courses provided beyond the regular course load of six courses a day. That means that prior to the change, a student taking more than six courses, or in technical terms, we refer to it as the 900 hours of instruction that's statutorily required for each student, a district would not report any of the courses above six or above that 900 hours. But for virtual courses offered by the Florida Virtual School, they would all be reported, as many courses as the student took. That resulted in an exponential increase of the number of FTE that was flowing through the formula and required to be funded, and it created a fairness issue between the school districts and the Florida Virtual School. Under the new policy, we have codified in law, and DOE now has the capability to match a student record. So they can look at a student record in a school district and at the Florida Virtual School and provide that identification of who the student is and what courses they are taking or are taking, which allows them to enforce the maximum value of one FTE across all instructional delivery systems. So now, regardless of the entity providing the instruction to the student, each student will generate the maximum of 1.0 FTE and the same amount of funding that is provided for a student in one county will be the same amount of funding across the whole state. Every student will be funded the same. Chairman, I think that's all I was going to go over, and now DOE has a much more detailed presentation of how this all works.
Members, unless there are specific questions regarding Alice's recap of what we did last year, we'll move straight into Ms. Champion's presentation. Welcome, Linda. How are you?
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. Alice did a great job laying the foundation for this. In fact, the first two slides that you see here are really the narrative that describes what Alice really just covered. One of the things I would point out is that we have always captured all the instructional time that a district offered. The district would, though, only assign FTE values to up to 900 hours, so that, again, those other instructional hours beyond 900 would not carry FTE weights. And this, of course, describes the fact that we put this data through a very complex system of edits as well as staff analysis to ensure the quality of the data. And then it is aggregated for funding purposes. So in this current year with the new policy, again, every amount of instructional time for a student will be assigned an FTE value. And that is, as Alice indicated, through the use of a common student identifier that's required in law for a student to be funded through the FEFP. And involves a proration exercise, which I think you can see in this first example. This is a high school student that's actually taking 7 50-minute classroom periods each day. And the way this would have been done previously is 1/6 of an FTE would have been assigned to the first six courses, and you can see the seventh course would not have carried any FTE value, so that we'd have a total of one reported for this student. Under the new method, again, each 1/6 is going to be reported for each of the seven periods, and then that is, as you can see in the final column, prorated back to a total of one. For the same student, who in addition to the seven periods at the classroom takes half of a semester of fitness through the Florida Virtual School, you can see then the way this would have been reported previously. The district would have reported one FTE, and the Florida Virtual School would have been reporting 0.0834, a half semester course for this student. Under the new method, that same values will appear and be prorated back then, so that under this new method, the school district will report a 0.9333 FTE for funding, and the Florida Virtual School will report 0.0667. In terms of some of the communications that we've had with districts to ensure that they're ready for this change, we have had presentations at conferences this summer for finance officers as well as MIS directors. Carolyn Dubard, who is our resident FTE expert, has planned six webinars this fall for school districts to focus on both the reporting and the calculating as well as forecasting under this new method. And then we've had a variety of memos, technical assistance, and then, of course, the FTE reporting instructions carry all of the descriptions of this new methodology, too. In terms of system modifications, we actually have those in place for the October survey, and we did have to redefine some of our processes, the steps that we go through, as well as understand from our technology experts that our programming was expanded to ensure that we could track students, that is, the storage and tracking of students was improved, as well as the programming to do the proration calculation by electronically. And then in terms of ensuring that students do have common identifiers, districts have identified a specific contact in each district that's to work on these issues and resolving, working with other districts and the Florida Virtual School to resolve any issues that arise. We are generating, we started with the 2012-13 data and did analysis on that, provided that information to districts in the Florida Virtual School so that we could clean up as much as possible before we get into the 13-14 year. But we do have reports that we do provide that identify students that have the same number and appear in several districts or two districts. And we also match on demographics of the students, so that if we have a student that looks the same and appears in stuff in different districts but has a different student identifier, we'll still make that available so that districts can resolve that to determine whether it may really be two separate students with the same name or same birth date, but they may not, so we can identify that. And then also looking at students with a very high FTE amount, that is an excessive one or almost two, that would indicate you're really talking about two separate students, as well as those with very low FTE, which would indicate that it also could be a problem there. So, again, that's the type of thing we're doing in support. We have the October survey scheduled for the 14th through the 18th. It's usually several weeks after that before we have data that we can analyze and look at, but we'll be glad at that time then to provide information to you about, you know, the results of this implementation. And with that, I'll just take questions, Mr. Chair.
Members, any questions? I have a quick question. You know, some of the kind of feedback that I had received back, not only from my district, but a couple others, and some individual on-site principals and others, it seems, it looks like you went very proactive with the common student identifier issue, which I knew was a little bit of a kind of glitch to get over for some of the districts. Another one of the things that I heard a little bit about was course cataloging and making sure that that it was all kind of aligned to actually be able to be properly accounted for, that all courses, especially blended courses and that sort of thing, that they could be accounted for properly with the student based on that same weight. Is there anything as far as an update regarding that you can provide?
I would, Mr. Chair, speak to the issue of the blended learning. We have added a data element to capture that so that school districts will be allowed to identify that on the student record. Is there more on that, Tammy, that you... Okay.
What was it?
To address... Okay. Very good. Thank
Members,
you.
Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Henry. I'm sorry. Representative Atkins?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question. It's not related to this presentation, but can I offer that question? Okay. So I know as part of the appropriations process last session, there was proviso language dealing with $1.6 million that was set aside for some DJJ work. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to see if there was someone here from DOE who could give us an update on where we are with the implementation of that work.
Ms. Champion, I don't know if anybody here is available for that specific thing. If not, is there anybody?
I don't believe there's anybody here to address that at this point, but we certainly...
Is there any way that you can send a message to somebody to perhaps get that information to Representative Atkins after
Absolutely.
The meeting? Yes, ma'am.
Just to follow
Absolutely.
Up. Because I've been told, and I just need to verify, I've been told that that hasn't taken place yet, that we're several months into the year. I'm hearing that they're looking at needing to hire an additional staff person to administer this $1.6 million. So I'd like to get some additional information on that as well.
I received a similar update on that last week, so to whatever extent, whomever is in charge of that, or at least administering that that appropriation, if we can get back to us, that'd be great. Thank you. All right. Members, thank you. I'd like to thank all of the DOE staff, obviously, for coming out. I'm sorry. Ranking Member Taylor.
I just
want to hear your voice, man.
Yeah,
say welcome.
I just wanted, before we leave, Mr. Chair, I wanted to personally thank the speaker for allowing the members who have previously served on this committee to be retained on this committee. I've been up here 6 years, and I don't really remember that happening. There's always been a major shakeup in all of the committees, but I just want to congratulate him for your reappointment. I think you did an outstanding job. I mean, last year was just phenomenal, you know, the way that we were able to work through a number of issues. And I wanted to welcome our new vice chair, Representative Rayburn. You got some huge shoes to fill. if you really want to do this job well, I would recommend that you spend a lot of time with Representative O'Toole to be able to do this job. But I just wanted to thank the members of this committee and you personally, Mr. Chair. I really enjoyed working with you, and I think this committee did an outstanding job. We put together a budget that I thought was a good budget. You had my vote, and you had the votes of the members of this committee, and I just want to applaud you, and I'm glad to see our staff is back. And of all of the committees that I worked on, I just see them being one of the hardest working staff in the Capitol. And I just want to, you know, let them know that I do appreciate the fine work that they have done on this committee. And if I could just have one more point of personal privilege, and I just really wanted to announce that my son, who is a third grade teacher at Smart Polk Livingston Elementary School in Duval County, he's been nominated by his school to be Teacher of the Year.
There we go.
And I just wanted to tell him that I know he's watching. I wanted to tell him that his daddy loves him and he's very proud of him.
Oh, we're all proud of him. That is an awesome update. And I too, Ranking Member Taylor, am very happy to see you back. I loved the way that we worked last year, and you know, and I look forward to that process again. And congratulations to your son. The fruit does not fall far from the tree, as we say. Members, thank you again for coming out today. Any additional questions that you may have or clarifications, obviously the staff is always available to answer that. DOE, thank you again for coming out. And Representative Taylor moves.